B-Pod Studios.
Ramiro, Pebbles, and Melissa, the Get Up Crew.
Hot 96.9.
All right, we got to talk to Congresswoman Ayanna.
Yes.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So before we start, I just want to let you know that Pebbles is a hardcore Trump supporter, so
yeah,
you need
okay.
to be about what you're going to talk about. No, I'm just kidding. Although, I'm not kidding about this. Leroy, our producer, has a major crush on you.
Stop. This is not the time. Oh, no. Let's not do this. Keep it moving.
What?
All right. Next question.
Hey, Miss Presley's office reached out to us because she wanted to say something to our audience. She's working hard behind the scenes.
On a lot of things.
So go ahead. Talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I just appreciate what y'all are doing. When I was sworn into Congress in January, I came back to Roxbury 2 weeks later for a ceremonial swearing in, and I had everyone take a pledge with me because this is not work that I do alone. There were about 400 people there, and one of the tenets of that pledge, I won't enumerate all of them, but one of them is that I will inform joy because joy is also a necessary act of resistance. So I just want to thank you all for the role that you're playing in the movement, not only in giving me an opportunity to say hello to your listeners and just to check in on folks, but it's important that we keep our joy in the midst of all this. So thank you for giving us the place where we can laugh and also mm-hmm. get information.
We try, madam. We're
trying.
No, I appreciate y'all so much. Certainly, I'm no longer on the city council, so I'm a member of Congress now, and so I've been focused on the federal response. And, you know, we've been fighting hard against some very challenging dynamics, you know. I really try to stay out of my mentions and not to engage trolls, but I couldn't help myself yesterday. Someone had, it's a reoccurring theme that I see that people will say we need more legislators and less activists in government, and you need both. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get that now in the face of the incompetence, the callousness, the cruelty, and every ism being inflated under this administration, you don't have any choice but to be an activist. I mean, look what our governors have been reduced to. They're having to create Twitter videos begging for essential medical equipment. It's as if the occupant, and I don't call him the president ever, he does not embody the integrity, the intellect, the strategy, the empathy, the compassion. He's simply occupying the space. He embodies nothing that a president should, and certainly not during these turbulent times. So, we've passed three packages out of the House, three relief packages. We're advocating aggressively for a fourth one that'll be focused on infrastructure and economic recovery. The one that we just passed is the CARES Act. And that was a bill that the Republicans put forward that was really just a bill to benefit corporations. And we did everything we could to make that by being activists. And Speaker Pelosi is a very shrewd negotiator to make that bill work as much as it could for individuals, families, and workers. But that bill still left a lot of people behind. And it has everything to do with the cruelty of this administration. It doesn't take care of the undocumented. It does nothing for the uninsured. But there were some gains that I fought for that did get in there. So one is a temporary pause on student loan payments, as well as stopping the involuntary garnishment of wages and benefits. So what does that mean? People like to frame the student loan issue as a millennial issue. Now, we have a $1.6 trillion student debt crisis in this country. We have 855,000 federal student loan borrowers just in Massachusetts. And black and brown students borrow more than anyone because we don't have generational wealth. And that's a conversation for another day, why that is the case. And we also default more than anyone else. So I'm 46 years old, and I have many peers still paying student loans. And there are senior citizens still paying. I have a senior citizen still paying student loans, and that's why their Social Security checks get garnished when they default on a payment. So we're trying to eliminate as many bills and provide as much debt relief as possible. So I did fight hard to get some compromise, and that is that they would stop they would pause student loan collection for right now, those payments, and they would stop involuntary garnishment of people's wages for those that are still working and benefits. What I want to see in the next package is complete student debt cancellation. Yeah. I had tried to get in that they would cancel a minimum of $10,000 of debt for every borrower or an upwards of $30,000 because the average borrower has at least $30,000 worth of debt. Mm-hmm. We didn't get that. But if we cancel student debt in the next package, that's immediate economic recovery that puts money in people's pockets. They can use that money for something else and, you know, maybe jumpstarts our economy. The other thing that I fought hard for was supports for our incarcerated men and women. It's so important that when we talk about vulnerable populations, that we are including our loved ones that are behind the wall. Our prisons and our immigration detention facilities, our homeless shelters, these are all petri dishes, you know, that really support any pandemic or virus thriving. You cannot socially or physically distance in a space that is overpopulated. And they also have unequal access to the things that you need to stay sanitary, to protect yourself in the midst of this pandemic. And so we were able to get $100 million for our federal prisons and $850 million for states and cities. But what I think we need to be doing, and I'll continue to fight for, and I thank Suffolk County DA Rachel Rollins for her leadership and her clear voice in this, is compassionate release for those elderly incarcerated that have underlying conditions who, you know, certainly pose no threat to anyone. We should be prioritizing compassionate release of our senior citizens. 10% of our incarcerated are elderly and do have an underlying condition that would put them at a risk to this pandemic. But there are also so many people. The reason I'm trying to eliminate the cash bail system is, y'all know how many people are in jail who have been convicted of nothing, mm-hmm. and they're just there because they couldn't afford bail? Mm-hmm. Why are they in jail right now? Or they're there because of a traffic violation? So, you know, when we talk about our prisons and our jails, we need to be looking at ways to decarcerate right now so that we can make the population less dense, mm-hmm. because that density is what supports the pandemic, the virus growing. And then we also, this was something else that I fought for that we were able to get in the last package, and that is $4 billion for those experiencing homelessness. And just really quick on that front, I want to say, you know, there were folks that were being critical of progressives that were fighting for big, you know, systemic change in these bills and using this crisis as an opportunity to do that. And the reality is that this crisis has really highlighted and worsened every socioeconomic fault line. You know, this is, we are being really exposed for people who've been in denial about the stratification in our society and whose lives we value. And so now you see in states like Ohio, they are taking motels and hotels that are now at zero occupancy because of the pandemic, and they're putting people experiencing homelessness into those motels and hotels. I mean, these are the sort of things we've been fighting for as progressives for a long time. This is just about the acknowledgement, you know, that, look, this virus doesn't discriminate, and our response cannot discriminate. You know, all means all. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, so we were able to get $4 billion for those experiencing homelessness, supports for our shelters and things like that. One of the other things I've been pushing for, and you've seen some disturbing reports already on this, is Senator Warren, Cory Booker, Senator Kamala Harris, and I, we all partnered, and we wrote a letter to Health and Human Services demanding that they begin collecting racial data in real time of who is showing up. We already collect age and gender, so we think that we should be collecting racial data in real time. Latinx, African-American, Native and Indigenous folks, AAPI, so that we can make sure that the response is equitable. Because in the past, we know that there has been unequal access to health care, which is why we also have the higher prevalence of health disparities, diabetes, asthma, heart disease. By the way, these are all the things that make us, these are underlying conditions. We all grew up saying someone in the family has sugar. Mm-hmm. That's an underlying condition. I don't even think our folks realize that, because we conflate our poor public health outcomes with just an inevitable reality of being black and brown. But all of this leaves you vulnerable to contracting COVID-19. And then if you do contract it, we suffer the most severe consequences. So we need that racial data to make sure that the embedded racism that we know exists within our embedded bias within our healthcare system that exists, that it is not showing up. Because when H1N1 hit, black folks had the highest mortality rates. Michigan put out numbers yesterday, y'all. Black folks are 14.1% of the population of Michigan. I know we all define Michigan as Detroit, but Michigan, black folks is 14.41% of the population, I believe, there. And they represent 35% of the COVID-19 cases and 40% of the fatality.
Oh, my God.
So when you're asking for all these things, what is the other side? Why are they fighting? Is it just because you're asking for money and they don't want to spend money on things?
I mean, listen, y'all. I mean, so we were able to get this cash, in this direct cash, right?
Yeah.
And depending on your income, you'll get either $1,200 or $2,500. I can come back some other time and explain that further. And those checks will come sometime in the next 3 weeks. But there's been some projections that it could be 20. Okay, these are the types of things that we're fighting for. That one-time cash infusion, it might stem some of the hurt if it comes immediately, but it's not enough. Mm-hmm. People, we should be offering this every month, and we need a moratorium on evictions and foreclosures and rents and mortgage and utility payments. I mean, do y'all know there are places where people are having their lights turned off in the midst of this pandemic?
Yep.
So we need to address all of those things. And, you know, look, there are some numbers that say if we hadn't bailed out corporations, that we might have been able to give each person $13,000 instead of a one-time cash infusion of $1,200 to $2,500. So what's their response? You know, they think we're socialists. You know, I don't... You know, they think this is, we are being opportunistic, and we are trying to exploit a crisis to advance our own agenda.
Right.
I mean, they're just cruel. I don't know what else to say. They don't care about every single person. That's the only thing that I can really hear.
We're talking to Ayanna Pressley, because I look at it like I'm not a politician. I just look at some things like almost like common sense, and I'm like, there's just some things that you should stop making people pay for if they're not bringing in any money, because now if they can't pay for stuff, now they're going to get evicted from their house, and that just means more people out on the street, and that's just not going to help with this whole social and physical distancing
thing.
Can't
eat.
Yeah, they can't eat. It's just creating more of a problem.
Yeah. I mean, look, when I was elected to Congress, so not only am I fortunate to be a part of like a history-making class, unprecedented in diversity and representation and number of women, but we have had some unenviable things that have happened historically. When I joined Congress, we were the first freshman class to join in the midst of a federal government shutdown. And there were workers that lost one or two checks. And my colleagues did not believe that those one or two checks was forcing people to go to a food pantry, and many of them were on the precipice of eviction. They didn't believe it. I mean, most people can't save. One job isn't even enough anymore. People are working one and two and three jobs. And forget our most vulnerable workers. Like, one of the things right now I'm fighting for is, like, our custodians, they should be considered frontline healthcare workforce. Mm-hmm. If we're going to make investments to protect our heroes, our doctors, our nurses, and all those that are patient-facing, you know, our custodians, as far as I'm concerned, they're our heroes, too, because they are disinfecting and sanitizing and cleaning, you know, all of these spaces. But again, this crisis just really highlights how we've been upside down in sort of this social hierarchy of what work we value, what work is dignified. And so what's happened now? Essential workforce are people working in grocery stores, you know, our custodians, are, you know, workers that many have rendered invisible. So I just think that we don't have enough people who bring that lived experience, who are connected closely to the ground, to the people, to understand just how many people for so long have already been living on the margins, that are a health crisis away, a layoff away, you know, one disruptive life event away from disaster. And that's been true for a long time. And so the people that have already been hurting, that hurt is only being exacerbated in this moment. And I'll just say about the Trump administration, you know, through their, you know, reckless policy and, you know, policymaking, their negligence, they've been slowly killing a lot of folks for a long time. And I just think that now they're just doing it with a more bluntly.
Right.
And this administration has blood on their hands. That's it.
Right. Well, thank you for coming on with us. Ayanna Pressley, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. Pebble's highlight of the week was when you started following her on Twitter.
That's very exciting.
And Leroy, is there anything before we say goodbye to Ms. Pressley that you'd like to say?
No, just much respect. Well, don't do this.
Well, why don't you, do you play?
Leroy, honestly, that touches my heart. You know, not everybody can appreciate a baldy.
Listen, if you do online gaming, Leroy, why don't you give her your gamer tag?
No, stop it. Y'all got me looking crazy right now.
He's a Tetris master.
I appreciate y'all so much, and I followed all of y'all on social, so you DM me anytime, and I hope you'll have me back, and just thanks for what you're doing for the people.
Find more great podcasts at bpodstudios.com, the place to be for podcast discovery.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.